Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy and I am an alcoholic. Housekeeping. We will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can also sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance tonight. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Anyone can use the chat function to send their phone number to the newcomer privately. Are there any newcomers? I don't really have the whole thing in front of me. Mike, do you see anyone? No? Okay.
No, I don't.
Okay. This is the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step two. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Bobby C. from Chesapeake and Jonathan P. from Norfolk. Thank y'all for coming. I will be reading the first paragraph on page 45, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Page 45. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if, when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face, but it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope. We were not true alcoholics, but after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you. But cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. I didn't ask who wanted to go first. Who wants to go first? Bobby, I'm looking at you. Go ahead.
Okay, we made eye contact, huh?
Okay.
Hey, my name's Bobby. I'm an alcoholic. And I love this. I love this stuff. I really do. So I'm in my my now, thanks to God, my 10-year-old big book, which has been glued back together and underlined many, many times. And hey, before I jump in here and say how much I love this. So my home group is Joys of Recovery. It's Thursday night at 8. It's a big book study over behind Indian River High School, if you know Chesapeake area at all. And right now we're in the stories in the back of the big book because we actually read right through the whole big book. It takes about 2 years now. It used to just take an hour, like a year and a half, but it's right at 2 years now. My sobriety date is October 18th, 2011. And my last drink was actually October 14th, 2011. That was a Friday night. We left the bar before midnight. And October 15th is where the DUI, the hospital bills, and the towing of my motorcycle off the Chesapeake Expressway all came to pass. So October 15th is a really special day. That's the day I woke up with the worst hangover of my total, complete life, physically hurting. The bruise was spreading where the handlebar caught me. And I actually poured out some of my open bottles that were in my my little stash of booze that was in the kitchen cover, lower cover, and actually poured some of them out, but I didn't pour out the unopened ones. I just couldn't bring myself to do that because I'm a real alcoholic, like they say. So I wanted to give those bottles to somebody who could use them, right? Which is just the most insane thinking. So that's kind of, that was it. No, just so you know, that was my third time picking up a white chip. Got my first white chip at 87, I was 22, drinking myself to death into AA, got a DUI back then too. Had a great run in AA, 5 years, chip, home group, whole nine yards. And then I went off to school and I gradually got away from AA. And I thought I had it figured out, thought I was actually smarter than AA was. Like all this stuff about finding a power greater than yourself. Oh, I thought I had it, man, I nailed it. I had it good. And anyways, got my degree, started working and stuff like that, but gradually found myself wanting to have a beer again and thinking maybe all that stuff I did, which was almost 10 years ago by that point, was, man, I was 22, maybe I was just taking this stuff too seriously, right? And I found myself drinking some non-alcoholic, I forget the name of it, green bottle beer, but there was something missing, right? So that something missing was the real alcohol kick of a real beer, right? So eventually I found myself getting my first six pack, and that's what started me back drinking again. And I tried to quit in 2000 again. My first daughter was born in 99. My dad was dealing with cancer. My grandfather passed away, and I couldn't take all of that. And being sober on my own, because I was on my own, I went back to AA, but never got a sponsor. I don't remember if I ever picked up a white chip, but I went to AA and I was one miserable SOB. So eventually all that pain of trying to physically not drink all on my own ended up having to go drink again, because that was my only solution to life, y'all. Because like on these pages, and that's enough of my story. I just wanted to add you in there for those of you who don't know me. And I do see some people I know here, and it's awesome seeing some of these faces, by the way. So I'm a real alcoholic, like they say in there, because I have the allergy. And I have the allergy. Now, it could be my Italian-Irish genetics. I don't know if that's true or not, but it doesn't matter, right? I have the allergy that when I get a little bit of alcohol in my body says, give me some more of that stuff, right? And that all started at about 13 when I had my first beers and my first drunks, period, you know. By the time I was 15, I was going to the liquor store on a Thursday night with my paperboy money, because the old ladies ran a store on a Thursday night, and I could get booze with my library card. But if you tried to go in there on a Friday night, the young guy was working and he checked everybody to see if you really had a card. So I would go on Thursday night, get a bottle of Mad Dog, get some Jack. And it was all just to, you know, survive the Western New York winter where I was when I was younger. I didn't think anything of it. It was just perfect. When I had alcohol in me, all of the pain and the shame and the guilt of being like a broken home and being poor and just everything else, you know, my dad left when I was young and it all just disappeared with alcohol in me. So when I got to this point, where it says, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis, my thought was, I don't know. That's a hard choice. You know, how bad is the death going to be, you know? And I chose to live the alcoholic life until the end. And I was at 22. I was from 19 to 22. I really tried to drink myself to death. And in my big book here, it says, but after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. My book says that's must number two. And I just want to point that out for anybody who like goes to open discussion meetings and they say, well, there are no musts in the big books. It's just a suggested program of recovery, blah, blah, blah. That's not true. There's some must that if we want to get the good life, if we want to get the sobriety, the true recovery, the spiritual awakening, then there's some stuff we must do. And number one starts with not picking up the first drink today, right? And if I don't pick it up today, some of those todays add up, right? I'm not talking about tomorrow, just not picking up that first drink today. And the lack of power, no human power could relieve us of our alcoholism, right? And I know I've probably talked more than my 5 minutes already here. So I'll stop there because we're going to keep talking about that power and how we get there. So I'll turn it over.
Thanks, Bobby. Jonathan?
My name is Jonathan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jonathan.
I have a sponsor and he knows that I am his sponsee and I try to call him regularly. I have a home group. I'm currently stationed in Washington, D.C. My home group is the Midtown group. And I love all of these pages here. I'm going to move my keyboard so I can see my book again. And I wish we had more than 5 minutes because this is the chunkiest reading we could have picked for a 5 minute share.
Y'all talk as much as you want. I had no idea that first reading was that long either.
And there's so much in it. It's crazy.
It is. We have to split that up. All right.
You know, he talked about the being doomed to an alcoholic death. That's my second favorite sentence in these readings here. As a drinker, I like to sum up my drinking, and people who know me have heard me say this probably 1,000 times, but whenever I start drinking, I'm incapable of keeping my mouth shut, my hands to myself, or my pants on at a pivotal moment in time when normal people would take, you know, the normal action. They would keep their pants on. I don't know why my story involves so much of that, but it does. I'm not somebody who drank my life completely into the ground. I had a lot of things going for me when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, on the outside, physically, you know, and the mask was still quite on. I had a decent credit score. I was about to get married. The Navy hadn't kicked me out yet, although I was going to treatment, so they were very close. I was on my last leg, as it were. My drinking and the things that happened because of it, it was a very inner experience. Most of it all happened up here. I'm one of those people who obsesses about getting alcohol and enough alcohol. But I also obsess about attempting to control my drinking and drink like a gentleman. My parents were people. They were lawyers. They both died from alcohol-related deaths. I don't want to classify them as an alcoholic, but they certainly died because of alcohol. But the way that they drank, I never once saw my dad drunk. My dad always had a glass of scotch in his hand, but he was always in control of himself, whether he was driving the car with a glass of scotch in his hand, or he was at a camping trip or in the house. They were both lawyers, and they enjoyed, you wake up in the morning, you go to work, and then you have a client. So you pour your client a glass of scotch and one for yourself, and then you have a drink at lunch, and then you have another client, and then you get home, and it's been a long day at work. And they were those kind of drinkers, they weren't guzzling and doing crazy shit like keg stands and beer funnels like I was doing. They were, they just happened to have a drink around them at all times, and that's what I wanted to be. So I would try methods like I once bought like 15 fancy beers. I spent like $240 on these super, like some of them are from France, like monks in France are making them or some crazy shit. And I put them all in my fridge, and I was going to make, cute little tasting notes in my journal and talk about these beers. And I was going to be super hipster and grow like a, twirly mustache and wear plaid and beanies and stuff. And talk about craft beer. And by day two, I had three fancy beers left. I was supposed to, wax poetic about how great, one beer was a day, and I couldn't even make it past 2 days. And I drank about 200 of the $240 worth of beer. And that was kind of how my drinking went. I exhibited a lack of control, but drinking was fantastic. If I can drink safely, and I can constantly stay at a very nice, decent level of buzz that my parents, seem to be able to do before they both passed away, I'd probably still be drinking. But as it was, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I definitely relate to the, choosing, being doomed to an alcoholic death over a spiritual life. My first AA meeting my sister took me to, and she's 6 months sober, and I had no interest in getting sober, even though I just got a DUI. And I heard a bunch of people talking about God, and I was like, that's it, I'm done with this. Let's go drink for old time's sake. So, me being the gem that I am, I tried to get my sister to go have a drink with me after, she just took me to my first AA meeting because there's too much God talk and I can't deal with the God stuff. So, although, the consequences of drinking are starting to rear their ugly head, here I am, I'd rather take my chances out there. One of my favorite paragraphs here is where it talks about a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life. I love to be philosophically comforted, and that I need that in my life. In fact, I'm waiting for somebody to write Alcoholics Anonymous Part 2 that talks about the inner mysteries or something cool like that, because that's the type of shit I get into. When I'm not feeling spiritually fit, I will become a born again Christian again. I will go to the Buddhist temple. I will start researching Hinduism. I will read Plato's The Republic. I will become a Stoic. For Marcus Aurelius, I do yoga, kale smoothies, all of it. Like, I need all of those things in order to be spiritually fit. And as soon as I stub my toe and I curse in public, I can't be a Stoic anymore because I just curse in public. So then my everything just goes to the shitter because I just ruined my spiritual experience, right? I am no longer philosophically comforted. And I think probably for the past 11 years, that's been my biggest struggle is realizing that I don't get or deserve to be philosophically comforted. That comes as a proxy of, coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and attempting to lead a spiritual life and practice these principles in all my affairs. I don't know if it's philosophical, but I am often my most comfortable after speaking to a drunk after a meeting. That's when the magic really hits. That's when it's always hit for me. When I'm when I'm all jacked up in my head, sometimes I wish there was more. I wish I had, somebody had invited me to the advanced class for AA. But really, it's just as simple as pulling my head out of my ass. Trying to listen to the newcomer as opposed to speak over them, and just trying to be a conduit for what I was given by taking the 12 steps. So that's all I got.
Thank you both. We're gonna continue the reading on page 46. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. Bobby?
Yeah, I love that. I love that other simple steps part. So the coolest part about AA is that it is wide open for a person to find a God of their understanding. And they're going to repeatedly drive that point home here because they're trying to make the path as wide as possible to let the hurting, self-centered, fighting everything, arguing everything there is to, you know, argue about alcohol, and typically in complete denial, in a really incredibly powerful way. So the point here is that G-O-D can be good orderly direction, right? If you want to take it like that. These words that I loved, because when I first came back to AA, and when I first got exposed to some of the deeper stuff of AA was Emmett Fox Sermon on the Mount, right? So my sponsor at the time, Randy, his sponsor went back to the 50s. And that's the book that they read. Yes, they read a big book, but they also read Sermon on the Mount. And they studied the Bible too. The book of James was a big deal. So this whole creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, realm of the spirit, broad, roomy, inclusive, and open to all people. That's the whole, what's unique about AA is where it started out. Because if we know from history, right, they started out of the Oxford group, which was very, very Christian. And a little, and I'm grateful for that now that I've come along this spiritual path and had some spiritual experiences and part of the spiritual awakening. Very grateful for it. But I couldn't have got sober on that old fashioned Oxford group. It wouldn't have worked for me at all. AA as it is today worked wonderfully for me. The sharing of the common pain that we all experience, you know, the story about the Titanic and being stuck in the lifeboat together. We've all had that pain of alcoholism and an ability to get out of hell on our own, right? And what they're making here is just a point that there is a way out, right? Which is one of the titles they were going to use on the big book at one time. There is a way out, or the way out. And it is through this spiritual stuff. And I have seen people try to argue it. But, you know, the whole point of this chapter, we agnostics, is to say, well, you know, and I think, I don't know if we'll get to it tonight, but it says basically, hey, we used to be kind of agnostic too. And I was, right? I believe there was a creator, but in my head, God should have been nicer to me in my life. There's a self-centered thing again, right? It goes deep, I tell you. God should have been nicer to me. I should have had a better life. And anything I ever prayed for, it didn't really work out very well. And specifically when I needed some stuff to go right in my life, man, I felt like God zapped me every time. It was like the thunderbolts. You know, I used to joke about, you know, you couldn't get me into a church because I was afraid the church would burn down if I showed up at the front door. But that was a part of my Catholic upbringing. So I grew up Catholic and altar boy, you know, a big Irish family on my mom's side, the whole nine yards. And part of the deal was I knew that I couldn't live up to anything. So I knew that I was going to hell. So if I was going to hell, I might as well just have fun while I'm going there, right? And that was my deal. There was nothing I could ever do. I was just destined for the not going to the pearly gates, put it that way. So when I was first got exposed to this stuff, and they said creative intelligence, spirit of the universe. That's the language I hooked onto. I could deal with that, right? And then later I got into yoga and stuff like that. And it's all just more, it's spiritual, you know, with a capital S of the spirit. And that's the kind of stuff that I could really get into. And that's all you need. Like it says here at the start, this is all we needed to start on spiritual growth and to get some kind of conscious contact with God. I'll stop there. Thanks. Over to Jonathan.
Jonathan.
Sorry, I had to unmute. Thank God for this paragraph. Thank God y'all don't kick people out of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, because when I came here the first time, oh my God. If y'all haven't noticed, I love to talk, and I love to talk about myself, and I love to sound like I'm the smartest guy in the room. And when I get nervous, I don't like sit in your back corner with a hat on over my head and just try not to talk and then run out of the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I want to argue and debate, and I want to crap all over your meeting for 20 minutes about how there is no God. That's what I get when I first come into Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what you guys get. Thank Christ God doesn't make too hard of terms for guys like me, because I need, like, it's that philosophically comforted thing too. I want to win arguments, and I want to be the smartest guy in the room. I always make it sound like I'm down with, like, you know, Buddhism and yoga and all that stuff. I'm not super down with kale smoothies, but I am down with yoga and, things of that nature. In fact, I found it helpful not only for, you know, mental state, but, you know, back and stuff. The problem is when I get, like, extreme, with it. I want to, like, fly to India and get under the tutelage of a guru. And I think that's what's going to, you know, save me. I always go to the extreme with things of a spiritual nature. Maybe, like, you know, Bobby was talking about, it could be because of my Catholic upbringing, you know, that Catholicism can be very complicated. So maybe there's something wired in me that I need to seek complicated spiritual solutions. I don't know why that is. It's just the way that I am. I've also found that I need to separate somewhat my spirituality from AA. It's like a half and half equation. And what I mean by that is if I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings for the purpose, the express purpose of, you know, getting a warm and fuzzy feeling after the meetings or during the meeting, I'm in for trouble, you know. And especially for a guy like me, you know, whose ADHD is all get out. Zoom meetings, you know, as soon as you bore me, I haven't, like, prayed before the meeting to ask for a little bit of patience, love, and tolerance. I'm gonna switch over to video games or Netflix and just pretend like I'm here, you know. I don't know why, like, y'all don't give a fuck if I'm, like, my screen's on or off and I'm watching the meeting, but for some reason I stay in the meeting and I switch over. Maybe it's an ego thing. I don't know, but it's not helpful. And even at an in-person meeting, I've found that I need to, my job when I go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, is to look for newcomers to help. Purposely pick meetings where a lot of newcomers go to, for that simple purpose. And that's just me, you know. Don't attack me after the meeting, please. That's just my experience. So when I do that, I receive the spiritual benefits from this program, but, expecting showing up to an AA meeting and sitting my ass in a seat and screwing around on my phone for, you know, half the meeting, or sitting in this chair on a Zoom meeting and playing video games while one of y'all is talking in this ear and, you know, shit's blowing up and I'm killing aliens in the other ear. That's not effective. It's not an effective, spiritual recipe. So I need to seek outside. I do need to seek outside sources of spiritual connection. And, you know, the book offers many great suggestions and meditation, things of that nature. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you both. The next reading is on page 47. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Bobby?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that cornerstone. I mean, I love that meeting. I see Aaliyah here and Brittany and Melissa. I think we've all been over at that meeting. Love that meeting. And then I also love where the connection to cornerstone comes from the Bible connected into our big book, because that's what they were, the point that they were trying to make there. And I'm also very grateful that's all it is, right? That's all it is. And I've shared that with any of my sponsees, even sponsees for a while now. And it gets to a point where maybe they got to be willing to give up what they think they know one more time. And don't let what we think we know get in the way of the spiritual experience, right? Because the whole point is to experience God, like Jonathan was saying. Now, and I did some yoga too one time. One of my good AA friends from Lori from here in Chesapeake was doing a thing called Y12SR, which was really pretty cool. It was a combination 12-step meeting, and then they led you into the yoga moves based on what was talked about at the meeting. You know, it was a pretty neat thing. But to me, some of that stuff is icing on the cake, right? To do some stuff compared to what we're really talking about here is just a surrender of our old thinking to set it aside, you know? And maybe some of our old thinking, maybe there's some pieces and parts that is okay. It might be. Because what I'll challenge the guys that I sponsor to is let's put your thinking down on paper about God. And then let's see which things you want to keep. The stuff that's working for you, let's keep that. The stuff that isn't working no more, let's let go of that. And then we can do some ceremony too, right? Because I'm all about experiencing God. I like to write stuff down on paper. I like to throw that paper in the fire. I like to do some praying together. I think that's powerful stuff here. And what I have underlined in here, other than the simple cornerstone, is the spiritual structure can be built. And they're directing us to the spiritual experience in the back of the book. I don't remember if y'all go there. Amy, do y'all go there? Okay, I won't that. Because
we do go there. I don't know if we'll get there. If you want to say something about it now,
okay. Yeah,
you certainly can.
Yeah, so that little asterisk about the spiritual experience, spiritual awakening, they're going to show there that it's not like a one-time blinding light like Bill Wilson had, and it's not everybody has that. Some people do have that. But for some people, it's just an experience. And in the Buddhist method, my experience has been letting go of some of my old stuff that I've been carrying around on my back that I think I learned that maybe it worked for me at one time, but I let it go. And I tell you what, I used to joke that I'm kind of like a Christian Judas Boo, that old guy, because I liked a little bit of everything. But with the Buddhist thing, I really like, there's some really good principles in it, except the whole, and I do apologize for any vegetarians because I'm not a vegetarian. So I won't even go there, right? I just won't. But that's, I can't go for all the principles of Buddhism. Therefore, I'm not going to be a Buddhist. But I can go for all the principles of AA. That's why I am an AAist. Jonathan, I'll let you have at it, buddy.
Thanks, Bob. One of the things that, this is going to be a little bit of a winding path, but hopefully this ends up somewhere. One of the things that I hated, I absolutely couldn't stand when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm still not fantastic with it, because once again, like we mentioned, I'm a contrarian. You know, I argue, I debate, I like very complicated concepts because it assuages my ego. It makes me feel good about myself that I'm doing smart things, you know. So when I ask you for stuff and you tell me to keep coming back, it works if you work it, or, you know, one day at a time. I hated that stuff when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. It drove me up drove me up the wall. And after I took the steps and I got involved with some pretty hardcore big book thumping dudes when I first got sober. And so once I got like a working knowledge of the big book, I used to just try to tear into people when they would say crap like that, and they'd share and they have all their little sayings and, you know, why don't you pick any higher power, pick Harry Potter, pick a doorknob, pick Harry Potter's doorknob, you know, whatever. And I hate it. And part of it's egocentric, you know, because the meeting's not about me, you know, so maybe I just keep my mouth shut. Maybe somebody got something from it. But I mean, I'm so self-centered that I need the little Zoom screen with my face right by the camera. Otherwise, if I move it over here, I'm going to be looking over here, because I have to see my face while I'm sharing or I get distracted. That's how fucking self-centered I am. And it doesn't go away. I wake up every morning with the same amount of self-centeredness, regardless of how many steps I take, regardless of how much, you know, how many meditations I do. And the actions I take during the day, each day, that one day at a time crap that I hate so much, although it's starting to grow on me a little bit, each action that I take during the day offers me a little bit of spiritual currency. I found that, like, in the beginning when I took Alcoholics Anonymous and I took the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I did like a big amends. I'd feel spiritual for like weeks, and I don't know if anybody else felt this way, but that was like me. There's even one, I made amends to my stepfather, and that's a long story that we can't get into today, but he's a lot of people besides my crazy alcoholic ass thought he was, you know, kind of a piece of crap. And I felt spiritual for like 6 months after that. I was riding high. I was that's the way that I felt. But now it's like I have to affirm, you know, this God thing every day when I wake up in the morning. And this chapter or this paragraph right here for me is like a precursor to the work I need to do with step 6 and 7. You know, is there a God? What, you know, and if there is a God, he probably is pretty friggin' powerful, because he's managed to avoid notice and detection and any type of hard definition. You know, I'm sure if you're a staunch Christian or Buddhist, you have a very hard definition in your head, but there's 1,001, you know, ways to describe this God dude out there, you know. And you know, for me, one of them is powerful. The guy's pretty powerful. I need to affirm that every morning, every day, that I need to affirm that, because otherwise I start taking shit back, and I start, you know, as we talk about in the rooms, taking the old life back, which that's another one of those sayings I hated when I first came in, but I'm starting to really, I'm starting to understand it as I stay sober. And the reason I mentioned this is a precursor to step 6 and step 7 is I'm a guy who, obsesses over small details. Like I mentioned about the journal with the fancy beers before, I obsess over small character defects. And I try to grab and manage those character defects. And if we're talking about a powerful God here, you know, omnipotent creator of the friggin' universe, then he'd probably take care of a lot of that stuff. He doesn't really need, you know, and he's going to do it on his own. He, she, it, or they, I should probably stop gendering God. God will probably do it on their own time. It has very little to do with how much I journal or whether I, you know, watch some, who's, you know, that self-help tapes. I was trying to remember the name of that one famous self-help guy, and I always forget it. But affirming the presence of God, the fact that God is pretty friggin' powerful, much more powerful than my crazy ass, attempting to do that every day is key to my program. Thanks.
All right, we're going to move over to page 52. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution to these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was.
Okay, that cut short. That cut short of a really cool sentence. But I want to tell y'all a story. What Jonathan reminded me of. Oh,
I forgot to read the end. Hang on.
Oh, okay.
When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. Thanks, Bobby.
Oh, that's cool. That is cool. I thought it was, yeah, well, so when Jonathan was reminding me of this one, and this guy at the men's group, this meeting I'd like to go to over here at 7 o'clock on a Saturday, just men, this guy, Paul, one day he shared something about power greater than yourself. So if you want to test out that power greater than myself versus I'm pretty powerful, his deal was to stand in front of a full length mirror naked and look right at that mirror and say, you are the most powerful thing in the universe. You're more important than the creator. And you can't do it. Just the thought of that to say that into the mirror just doesn't work, right? But this God idea does. I love it. And that opening paragraph there, that just is my big book says that's alcoholism. All that negative, painful, gunky stuff. That's just alcoholism. And I won't even go there. But when we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon, and there's that very generic spirit of the universe. That's the universal spirituality stuff that I love. I still do, right? Because it opened the door for me big time. The simple reliance. And it doesn't have to be anything fancy or complicated. It really can be learning to surrender, facing our self-centeredness. And I know I'm talking, you know, step four stuff, but finding out what's blocking us from the sunlight of the spirit, right? And that's what we do in later steps. But this coming to believe can be a simple thing. But like what Jonathan was saying here, though, most of us do complicate it big time. And that's probably where, you know, I first heard that the KISS thing, Keep It Simple, Stupid, was in AA, because that's something that works. It really is important to keep it simple. So simple reliance. So what is that simple reliance? It could be just that simple. I roll out of bed on my knees. I do the first three steps every morning. It works for me. And then I say that will be done until I really feel it. I mean it. That will be done. So that's just simple reliance. It doesn't need to be super complicated. And what I have seen work is the simple reliance takes care of all that stuff in the paragraph right up above it. That stuff, pray to misery, all that negative stuff, it just doesn't happen when I'm relying on God. And now that can be a simple thing. My big book says trust on the side. It's a reminder. So my big thing that I grew up with is fear. You know, fear, deep fear. So the solution to fear for me is to trust God. Trust God, it's gonna be okay. I'm afraid of whatever it is, fill in the blank. I wanna say Evan from Norfolk that moved away to North Carolina, big David's buddy Evan. Evan said, my brain, the automatic fear generator. And I love that phrase. He said it in a meeting one day, I wrote that down, I loved it. The automatic fear generator. So my brain automatically generates fear. And this is the solution, a simple reliance on this, the power of the spirit of the universe, which some of us, we experience when we're in an AA meeting, that we're sitting in a chair there. We experience that strength of the power of God working through the people in that room, through sponsors, sponsees. I know Jonathan mentioned the sponsor. Yeah, my sponsor, Hank, definitely knows that we talk all the time. And we talk our own stuff. We encourage iron sharpens iron, right? So we keep walking this walk together because it works. And that's the same thing I get with my guys. So we walk this walk together, these 12 steps, and we don't ever get to the top and get a little old sticker and say, oh, you're all healed up. It doesn't work like that. It's kind of a spiral, right? We go through those 12 steps, we get up a notch, we feel good, and we get it keep going up again. We keep going again. And then we find some other people to help. And then our experience of these 12 steps gets wider and better and deeper too, right? It gets deeper in ways. So Jonathan, I'll turn it to you, buddy.
Yeah, bedevilments had all of those guys when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. The misery and depression were weighed very heavy on me. Not so much the the personal relationships. I could do without those. They were just stepping stones for me in order for me to get what I want. Usually, easily manipulative partners, those types of things. Making a living, I could couch surf and mooch off of you or, whatever. Those things were, that was kind of how I lived my life. But the misery and depression, those get me. Anything that happens to me, it makes me feel bad about me. That's what really drives me into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was insanely concerned with my mental state. I was insanely concerned with my feelings. One of the greatest things that Alcoholics Anonymous taught me was that my feelings are not necessarily facts. In fact, about half of them are, should be passed over. And, my sponsor says this, I have to pole vault over a lot of those feelings whenever somebody's talking to me, somebody asks me a question that I feel is slightly aggressive. I have to pole vault over the lie that I want to tell. To get to the spiritual answer to that question. And that hasn't changed much. It's changed a little bit since I've been sober. It changes through step work and working with drunks, but the lie is still there quite often. The amount of times that I actually say the lie and the lie comes out of my mouth is much reduced. But the whatever it is up there, the automatic lie generator, if there was a Liarholics Anonymous, I probably wouldn't be here either, because I was doing that long before I was drinking. And it's tough. It's really tough to get around those things when I'm completely full of self and I'm not doing the things that I need to do. Which reminds me of another one of those stories that old timers used to tell when I came in the rooms, and I used to hate about the fish, and they're swimming, and then the old fish comes up and says, "How's the water?" And then the two fish are like, "What's water?" I hated stories like that when I first came in. I was like, "What the does that even mean? Like, give me a straight answer, dude." But that's the way it is when I'm not starting my morning off with some type of spiritual something. I'm just swimming around and I have no friggin' clue where I'm at. I'm just constantly thinking about, I wake up and, you're going to get fired today, or, you shouldn't have said that thing yesterday. Or you really should have done that thing you said you were going to do, and you're a piece of shit, Jonathan, you're the world's worst and blah, blah, blah. Cause that's where my brain goes when those things happen. Thank God for inventory, because a lot of those character defects have been drastically reduced. At least the propensity for me to act upon them, not necessarily the stuff that goes up onto my head. There's the part in How It Works that they read after the meeting, where it talks about the mental defectives. My sponsor always used to reach over and tap me on the shoulder and just shake his head and like look at people around the meeting every time that part came up. My sponsor, it was, he's one of a kind. It's true. When I don't wake up and I try to, and I don't start with a little bit of meditation, I don't start with another affirmation that God is, God either is or is he isn't. I find myself, and this is one of my other favorite paragraph over on the other page that we didn't read, the self-imposed crisis. I generate those like nobody's business. The self-imposed crises are just the spice of my unspiritual life. Of course, I can't see the self in it unless I'm doing inventory, but things have kind of evolved a little bit as I've done inventory. The line, I'm not lying to people near as much as I was when I first came in. I'm not aggressively bulldogging people near as much as I used to when I first came in. I'm a little bit more open to listening. The things that pop up on my inventory now are a little more nuanced. Remember, I like things complicated. So I guess God gave me complicated. Now I have to look at things like cynicism and arrogance. or not arrogance, that was there from the get-go, but cynicism and sarcasm. I never even thought to look at stuff like that until I was, you know, I had like 10 years sober. And my sponsor pointed this out to me. Sarcasm comes from here's some really fancy crap for you, make me sound really fancy. Sarcasm's from like the Greek word, he said, to tear or cut flesh, or to tear flesh with the teeth. Because sarcasm is like a second language to me in the military, along with cursing. I use it, and it's socially acceptable. It's funny, you know, you watch a sitcom, you're going to run into sarcasm and cynicism, you know, it's funny to people. So I want to be able to do those things too. But I'm finding I have less and less of a tolerance to lead just the cynical, sarcastic, pessimistic view on life, you know. It's becoming more and more painful for me to do that. I'm finding sincerity to be a lot more healing for me and a lot more helpful. And I never thought you'd hear me say that, you know. And I show up back on the boat, and of course it's all going to go to hell, and I'm going to go right back to, you know, sarcasm. Hopefully not, you know. Hopefully I've learned enough. But it's becoming the things that I need to ask God for help for are a tad bit more nuanced nowadays. I think that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank y'all. We have two readings left, but I think I'm going to skip the next one and go to the appendix on the spiritual experience. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. So at 7:52, I don't know, y'all should maybe try to do 3 minutes each. We'll just see what happens. Okay.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, okay, I'll keep it 3. Just wave me if I don't. I was saying that this is a great way to end the meeting, because it ends on a note of hope, right? The note of hope is that nobody's too far gone here, that even the people that might be struggling with this whole concept of a spiritual experience, spiritual awakening, they're just saying it is possible and you can get it. It doesn't have to be like Bill, doesn't have to be like anybody else in the meeting. And the whole point is that you can end up having a relationship. And I know that's a big word, a relationship with a spiritual angle to it. Let's just say that, right? That's probably easy. Anybody can get it. Now, it is transformation, right? So I have to go from being a self-centered a-hole, because that's who I am at my core, right? It's there. And transformed from a caterpillar to a butterfly. That's transformation. That's metamorphosis. And that's what the spiritual experience on page 569 or 567 actually starts, tells us about. That if we do these steps, that spirit can get in there and change us. Because if all we do is just don't drink, we're going to be miserable. It's not going to work. And we're going to have to go drink again. So the whole point that AA brings to the table to offer is that we can come to AA, and you can come too out of the fog of alcoholism, and come to believe in a power greater than ourselves. And it definitely does have to be a power greater than ourselves. So all the self-help books that tell me to love myself and all that didn't work for me at all. What works for me is being of service to other people, getting this close connection to God, working with other men to help them do these 12 steps straight out of the big book. Don't add nothing. Don't take nothing. Just do the big book. And then that personality change sufficient to recover happens, and it does happen. And that willingness, honesty, and open. So we normally we hear how, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, right? But that honesty, and I wrote down the word authentic is another one too. And vulnerable, some of those other words that we get, because in this program, we get to have deep and meaningful relationships with other people, deep and meaningful. And in my experience, and this is why I volunteered for step two, Amy, is because I've had a personal relationship with God today that absolutely has transformed my life into something completely amazing. And I'm so grateful because it's AA. So thank you. Let me end on that. Jonathan, you go, bud.
Thanks, Bobby.
Y'all got something here. Y'all really do. When I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to tell you guys, I've had every iteration of Ritalin, Adderall, and ADHD medication, group therapy. I got kicked out of my house and sent on a camping trip because I got a possession charge. So that's what my parents decided to do with me. It's a long story. We don't have time for it. I've been in every kind of group or name it, and I've probably done it and named the book, and I probably tried to read it because I was ingrained from an early age, and this has very little to do with AA and everything to do with my crazy ass that needs therapy. I was ingrained from an early age that something was wrong with me, you know, and my parents agreed with me. Something was wrong with you. That's why they sent me to therapy. That's why I had every iteration of ADHD medication. If there was a group of people, if there wasn't drugs, alcohol, or women, I'm not interested. You know, if there's nothing there to make me feel better about myself, I'm not going. So sitting around in with a group of people and talking about feelings and God and stuff, hell no. I did that. I did Bible camp. I've been confirmed and baptized and saved and God. All of it. I've been to like four different iterations of Christianity. And for some reason, I've been sitting in these rooms for 11 years. I don't know what that is, but a spiritual experience from taking the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Before the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, if I stub my toe, fart in church, or, you know, whatever, the smallest little infraction of what it takes for me to feel comfortable with myself, I'm drinking. I'm getting jacked up. I'm seeking ease and comfort through whatever method I can. Then after I take the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I still want to drink, but I'm driving to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And it happened almost immediately after taking the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I haven't found that bottled up anywhere else. I don't know what, that's the only explanation for it. Cause I didn't do anything else. Even after I took the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I still wasn't interested in your God stuff, really. That amends I told you about the other time, which is way too long to talk about here. That's more of a spiritual experience than I had. More of like a Bill Wilson type of moment. The spiritual experience I got from the 12 steps was a more practical psychic change, that something fundamentally switched in my brain, and it was immediate. It was immediate. Where when I feel uncomfortable, my brain is telling me to drink, but my feet are walking me to my car, and my hands are driving me to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I'm passing the gas station, and I'm passing the wine store, I'm passing whatever the dope man. I'm going to an AA meeting, and that to me is just absolutely insane. It's crazy that. That happened instantaneously. So y'all got something. And come quickly or come slowly, it's here. And I'll keep coming back. Thanks.
Right on. That was good. We're going to put up the virtual thing about the seventh tradition, I think. If not, the seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside, there it is, contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Announcements, are there any AA related announcements? I don't see any. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. If you're a little bit shy, you can email us at info@simpleactions.net. In closing, can we please thank Jonathan and Bob again for being here tonight? Thank you both. That was wonderful. Who can read the last couple of paragraphs on page 164? Aaliyah, I see you're volunteering. Can you read the last two paragraphs? Mike, will you put it up? Aaliyah looks like she's choking. All right, there we go. Aaliyah?
Aaliyah got shy.
What happened? Okay. All right, we're getting past the time. Mike, will you read it? There she is.
Oh, it's Ashton. I'll read.
Oh, good. Okay.
I was about to make an announcement afterwards because I tried to get unmute myself, but I didn't get it in time.
So, okay. Aaliyah can't unmute. Okay.
It's okay. A vision for you, Facebook page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize, you know, only the Bible constantly disclose more to you and ask in your morning meditation what you do each day for the management of those things. They have simple time in your own house, vision order. But obviously, you cannot transmit to somebody that you haven't got. Stay to it that your relationship with you is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Stand in yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults and live into your fellow. Clear away the records of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you can surely be some of us if you try to grow to have this. May God bless.
All right. Thanks, Ashton. Let's close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. I don't know if everyone can unmute. Can everyone unmute?
Everybody can unmute now.
Okay. Our Father. Who art in heaven.
Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done.
On earth as it is in heaven.
Give us
this day our daily bread.
And forgive us our trespasses,
as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation,
but deliver us
from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
All right. That was so good. Thank you.
Yeah, it was. Bobby, Jonathan, thank you both for sharing.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Good to be here. Debbie, good to see you.
Hi, Rick and Jason.